Good morning. My name is Joel Friedman. I'm an attorney in Phoenix. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Archambeau. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you because there is one issue that, during my preparation for this argument, appeared to me was not fully briefed. That issue is a comparison of the evidence that the ALJ relied on to create her version of Mr. Archambeau's residual functional capacity and the job demands of the three occupations identified by the vocational expert. In the record, Dr. Bluth testified that those jobs, assembly worker, quality control inspector, and surveillance system monitor, were not sedentary, but jobs where the person could sit or stand at their option, but they were always doing something, and they were allowed either to sit down or stand. Now, this has to be in the context of an eight-hour workday. If you look at Dr. Maxwell's medical source statement from May 2003, which is page 200 of the excerpt, 514 of the transcript, Dr. Maxwell only provided an option for a total of 6 hours sitting and standing, 3 hours each. We had focused on the 15-minute sit, 15-minute stand, 15-minute walk, and whether that, in fact, comported with the ALJ's acknowledgement that Mr. Archambeau would need to change position, but the ALJ limited that to alternate sitting and standing. If you look at Dr. Maxwell's entire medical source statement, though, the bottom line is that the total of 6 hours sitting and standing does not match up with the job demands as described by the vocational expert. There's another issue that also was not fully briefed, and that is that at no point during the hearing did the ALJ ever ask the vocational expert if his testimony was consistent with the job descriptions in the Department of Labor's Dictionary of Occupational Titles. That is a mandatory obligation. The court in Masachi set out that this is not something that's optional. It is mandatory. The ALJ must ask a vocational expert when he testifies about jobs that are performed in some unique way if that's consistent with what's in the DOT. There is absolutely no question from the ALJ about the vocational expert's description of the jobs, three jobs, which he indicated were ostensibly sedentary, but allowed the person to stand up as well.
I want to go back to your statement that Dr. Maxwell only provided for a six-hour day, 3 hours of sitting, 3 hours of standing. But he also rounded up for 2 hours of walking for an eight-hour day.
Correct. But the vocational expert's description of the three jobs did not include any time walking around. He said that the worker is, quote, doing something, close quote, and is allowed, quote, to either sit down or stand, end quote. That's at the 262 of the excerpt and 618 of the transcript.
But why is it inconsistent to include some measure of walking?
Because he didn't testify that the jobs permitted the person or required the person to do anything that was performed while they were walking.
Isn't walking more strenuous than sitting or standing?
It's not an issue of the degree of exertion required. It's an issue of the ability to stay in the work location, which is also something that Dr. Bluth testified. And
if you go to the CFR on sedentary work, which says jobs are sedentary if walking and standing are required occasionally and other sedentary criteria are met, which includes a certain amount of walking and standing as often necessary. I don't know if we're into a semantic dispute, but that doesn't sound inconsistent. That's regulatory definition with the evidence.
Well, that's where Masachi and Social Security ruling 004P come into play. The ALJ was required to ask the vocational expert at the hearing, is your testimony consistent with the Dictionary of Occupational Titles? If these jobs are sedentary, then one would assume that they are performed the way the regulations define sedentary work. In fact, though, the vocational expert was specific. that these jobs did not require walking. The ALJ did not offer that as an option. And when I asked the vocational expert the question, if the person needed to get up and move around for 3 to 5 minutes periodically, his testimony was the person would not be able to perform those jobs. So I understand that Dr. Maxwell gave a description of work capacity totaling 8 hours, but the activities that the vocational expert identified as critical to the performance of these specific jobs, and remember, we're outside any presumptions here. We're talking about specific evidence. The 6 hours total standing and walking does not match up with the VE's description of the job. There's two other issues. The ALJ found that Mr. Archambault's testimony, his description of his pain complaints, was not credible. That part of the case, I believe, has been fully briefed, but I would also point out that the ALJ tried to cite to the Fair versus Bowen case. Her citation, though, omits material aspects of what the court in Fair and later in Vertigan and Beneke actually said. And it's not just that there are certain daily activities that are inconsistent with pain complaints. To use that criterion to find a person not credible, those activities have to make up a substantial part of the person's day, and they have to represent activities that are transferable to a workplace. The ALJ did not explain, and she is required to do so. She cannot just offer generalized statements, reasons for finding a person not credible. There has to be a narrative discussion. There has to be a specific explanation, because there's no evidence that Mr. Archambault is malingering. In fact, three doctors testified or provided statements that his medical condition did, in fact, cause significant pain. Go back to Dr. Maxwell's medical source statement. Why would Mr. Archambault have been limited to 15 minutes sitting, standing, and walking? You've now been sitting for over 30 minutes. Imagine if you had to get up halfway through that first oral argument. You would have already been sitting, then you would be up, potentially walking around. Maybe that's something that you can do here, but it is not something you can do as an assembly worker, as a surveillance system monitor, or a quality control inspector. The third item that I wanted to bring to your attention is the ALJ's resolution of the question about Ms. Foreman's statement, the claimant's or plaintiff's sister. There's a new case, March 5, Bruce versus Astru, which specifically says that the ALJ must provide specific reasons germane to the witness why that person's testimony or statement does not corroborate the person's credibility. That's a restatement of existing law, but it is just a new restatement, and I would appreciate the court's consideration of that. I have about a minute and 20 seconds, and I'd like to save that.
That's fine. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mark Wynn, appearing for appellee Michael J. Astru. And first, going to the argument just mentioned right now, that's was not briefed at all before the district court or this court, so that argument's waived. The one regarding 004P, Masachi, and the vocational expert testimony. And in any event, the fact that when the ALJ questioned the VE, the ALJ asked the vocational expert to consider jobs that would allow him to change position at will. And as we discussed, Dr. Maxwell did, in fact, allow for 8 hours of work. And during those 8 hours of work, the claimant would be able to change position at will. And also, we discussed also the Reg 1567-404, which defines sedentary work, where standing and walking is used in conjunction, which makes sense because standing and walking are part of the same act of being on your feet. And there's no indication here that claimant had to walk away or walk. His own testimony, he even said that during the hearing, he said he was asked whether or not he had to go get up and go to make himself feel better with his pain. But at the hearing, he himself said, no, I don't have to do that. What I have to do is just position my body to make myself feel more comfortable. So any argument that he has to actually walk to alleviate his pain isn't supported by the record. And actually, at the hearing, it was actually claimant's counsel, not claimant himself, who first mentioned a need to walk away from the workstation. And the ALJ's decision is based on the opinion of claimant's longtime treating physician and surgeon, Dr. Maxwell. And not only that opinion, but it's also supported by the fact that claimant was evaluated by two other spinal specialists, Dr. Crandall, Dr. McLean. And all those physicians concluded that claimant could, in fact, perform a range of sedentary work.
Why didn't the ALJ have to give more weight to Dr. Glacey, given that he's a pain management specialist, whereas Dr. Maxwell is a surgeon, so it's not his area of expertise, and the regulations say that in weighing conflicting testimony, the ALJ should give more weight to the specialists.
We would submit that an orthopedic spinal surgeon is also a specialist with regard to diagnosing pain, treating pain, and also discerning how much pain a patient is in. And furthermore, he had actually, Dr. Maxwell, had a longer treating relationship with the claimant. Having performed the surgery, he had first started seeing Dr. Maxwell in about March 2001 and had been, his last assessment was dated May 2003. That's a two-year period. And whereas, as far as Dr. Glacey, he had started treating claimant approximately January 2002 and rendered an opinion at April 2002. Dr. Maxwell had, as well as being an expert in the field, also had the added insight of knowledge and longitudinal treatment of the claimant. He had actually been treating him before he stopped working and treated him thereafter, after conducting the surgery as well.
Can I also ask you about the point opposing counsel makes about the daily activities? Mm-hmm. Although he does report some daily activities in his write-up, he conditions them all with, I can only do these things with difficulty. I have to go and lie down. I think his sister says he has to lie down for a couple of hours or a couple of days after these activities. Why is that enough under our case law to say that to support the ALJ's adverse credibility determination?
In evaluating credibility, it's important to note that the ALJ found that claimant did have serious limitations. He was limited to sedentary work, which allowed him to alternate sitting and standing at will. So in that context, the activities that claimant testified of at the hearing did give the ALJ reasonable cause to actually make the finding that it compromised his credibility. We should go into those. One of the things he testified to and the ALJ mentioned was that he spent 20 to 30 minutes on the computer. And that's an activity which is somewhat consistent, overall consistent with the ability to change position at will. And the talk of...
The difficulty I was having with that credibility finding is, you know, in Fair v. Bowen, we said, okay, well, if you could run a marathon, obviously you might be able to do certain kind of jobs. But when they look at your daily activities, the ability that you have during your daily activities has to translate into the job situation. And this gentleman, he said basically he could do some personal maintenance, and that doesn't really translate into a job activity. And he could do some minimum household chores. But I didn't see anything in the record that would suggest somehow that his ability to do those without pain or to do them on a consistent basis or to do them, you know, for any length of time somehow translated into the job situation. Would you comment on that?
And for this job situation, which is a narrowed range of sedentary work, activities such as being on the computer for 20 to 30 minutes, being able to walk, even though he said walking was what increases pain, for 20 to 30 minutes as well, translates as well. And the fact that there was discussion of him doing work that were activities which actually exceeded sedentary work, say, for example, yard work, and feeding the pets and other activities which have some level of sitting and standing and some lifting as well, whereas the ALJ found that this claimant had varied narrowed ability, sedentary work, which is lifting less than 10 pounds, and the ability to do when he's at work, changing position whenever he wanted to, something he can't do during doing yard work, for example.
So when I look at his questionnaire, the yard vacuuming, mopping yard work is in the list of what is the most difficult self-care activity for you to do and why. It says these are very difficult for him, moving or carrying anything heavy. So suggesting that these are things he can't do very, very readily.
He says he did, in fact, do these. And he did say it was a chore to do these activities. But one thing, sedentary work, which the ALJ found the claimant could perform, doesn't require any vacuuming or mopping or cleaning. It involves pretty much sitting down or standing up whenever you need to. And that's what the VE found that this claimant could perform. So in this context, and for this particular case, the daily activities were connected and do have a nexus to the findings. And the daily activities, that wasn't the only thing that the ALJ considered. The ALJ also considered the fact that three specialists did render an opinion that this claimant could perform sedentary work. And also the ALJ also found that there were some non-anatomic findings by some physicians as well. And the reference the ALJ made were to Waddell's signs, which generally refer to a pain which isn't anatomic in origin. And there's a case, Ozenbrock versus Apfel, where this court found that the ALJ can consider such findings as well. And besides looking at the non-anatomic findings, looking at the opinion evidence, looking at the daily activities, the ALJ also did consider the fact that looking at some of the actual medical findings, even though that can't be the one reason, and it's not in this case, it can be a consideration. We have evidence that there's some diagnostic imaging evidence that there wasn't any recurrent herniation on the spine. There's some straight leg raising tests, which were negative as well, from Dr. Crandall. That's a test for low back pain as well. So this is a case where the ALJ's evaluation of the evidence need only be reasonable, but here we have actually three spinal surgeons who are supporting the ability to do sedentary work with ability to alternately sit and stand. So we submit that's substantial evidence which the ALJ could reasonably rely upon.
Thank you.
The ALJ only relied on one doctor as the basis for her residual functional capacity determination. That was Dr. Maxwell. Dr. Crandall was a one-time examiner. Dr. Glacey and Dr. Crane were treating physicians. The suggestion that Dr. Glacey's 5 months was not enough is pretty silly when you think that Dr. Maxwell referred Mr. Archambault to Dr. Glacey. Dr. Glacey then said, well, I don't really need to do this. Dr. Crane can do it. So here's two doctors that Dr. Maxwell was perfectly satisfied relying on to provide pain management. There's no basis for criticizing their assessment of Mr. Archambault's abilities. The issue about...
But was the ALJ required to accept the views of Glacey and Crane, given what Maxwell and Crandall said?
No, she's not. But if she's going to reject their opinions, she needed to do a much better job of explaining why their opinions were entitled to less weight, because the only reason she gave the fact that they only had limited time with Mr. Archambeau or that Dr. Crane was an internal medicine specialist, those are not sufficient.
But don't the opinions of Maxwell and Crandall constitute substantial evidence?
Dr. Maxwell's opinion is that Mr.
But does it constitute substantial evidence?
It constitutes substantial evidence in support of what he said. And what he said is 3 hours sit, 3 hours stand in an 8-hour workday. That is an issue, a general issue, general evidence that has been discussed throughout this entire case at the Appeals Council, at the District Court, and here. The fact that we focused on the 15 minutes versus the 3 hours does not change the fact that this is evidence in the record. These are issues that were brought to the court's attention, and there was no waiver of that. If I might, one last point, the activities of daily living, excerpt page 256, transcript 612. After the 20, 30 minutes on a computer, 20 to 30 minutes at the grocery store, Mr. Archambeau testified, I have to lie down or sit in a recliner. That's not consistent with a work activity. And if we're relying on Mr. Archambeau's testimony, let's rely on all of it, not just bits and pieces.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both counsel for your argument this morning. The case of Archambeau versus Estrue is submitted.